Recording in progress.
I'm ready. Are you ready?
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Safety Committee meeting. Clerk, will you call the roll?
Sure. Narduzzi?
Here.
Grindel?
Here.
Paverka?
Here.
All right. Thanks for being here, everybody. So this should be a quick meeting, but I wanted to update everybody on the police, and Chief Reed is going to piggyback on some of the stuff Chief Butler is going to talk about, and then we'll get to the golf carts. So, Chief?
Thank you, Councilman Narduzzi. All right, give you guys all a few updates. First and foremost, we recently had our sergeant promotions. Mayor Kurtz promoted Scott Sedlock, Everett Hayworth, and Shane Bates to the rank of sergeant. This effectively brings us to where we wanted to be earlier this year, where we talked about having two supervisors per shift. These sergeants are going to be very highly trained. We work today, myself and Lieutenant Martin, on setting up training for them to attend. We also started a FTO program for supervisors. We're one of the few departments that do that. We met with the sergeants. We allowed the lieutenants to give them training insight. What is it like to be a lieutenant? What they have to focus on? How to be a successful leader in independence? This way they can slip right into these ranks. They're going to be in a shadow program with their lieutenants. It's different. Many departments do not do this. They just say, congratulations, here's your badge, you're now a sergeant. They do not put this time and effort into the success of their team, and we want to be different. We have more training upcoming. We're going to be working with our clerk of courts, Angie, our prosecutor, Bud, our HR director, Bridget. We want to bring all of them in. We want as much knowledge for the sergeants to have as possible so they can be successful. Highly trained resource for the officers. If there's ever a time that you need something and you call for an OIC, we want to make sure there's a supervisor there that's on shift that can help train, can be a resource to our officers and anyone that calls with that advanced training. All of them will be going through an FBI LEADA supervisor training that is starting next year. We already have two of the three signed up in March. Myself, I will be attending that training as well. We are also today scheduled in November a pursuit training through the state. We're going to continuously do that. That was one of the themes of our field training program with our sergeants is we're never going to let them become complacent. We want to continue to push them to train, grow, learn from those around them, and elevate the position to something that's been different. In the past, some of you have called me or you text me, and I don't know who's listening to this online, about, hey, I see a suspicious person here, or we have somebody that's panhandling over here. I would encourage everyone on council to contact our non-emergency line and ask to speak to an OIC. That's an officer in charge. A lot of times if a resident contacts you and says, I see a homeless person or a suspicious person standing here, our officers are going to have follow-up questions. When you text me directly, I have follow-up questions, but you're not the person that's calling us. So in the example that recently happened about a month ago, a councilman contacted me, said there's a suspicious person doing X, Y, and Z, and they're panhandling for money. That we can write a citation for, but we need a victim. So whoever contacted the councilman is the one we need the police to speak to. So I'd urge you to contact the non-emergency line so that we can allow our officers to get the proper information to do their jobs.
What is that phone number?
And it is 216-524-1234. When somebody contacts you, you can tell them, please contact them, and you can follow up afterwards. Like, did the police take care of it? Whatever else, you can speak to an officer in charge. Now we have two officers in charge per shift that can help get that information. But we really want the officers to be able to communicate, as opposed to, I see a person standing on the corner. Well, the officers might say, what is that person wearing? Do they have a hat on? I see three people standing. Which one is the one that's doing it? They have follow-up questions. We want that communication. And we want to continue to encourage the citizens to contact us. Lateral posting is forthcoming. Mayor Kurtz has signed a document allowing me to engage in conversation with the Civil Service Commission. We have a few open spots currently, and we hope to post in a few months so that we can continue the progress that we have all been making with the department. School safety is something I'm going to turn over. There's multiple sides on this. I want to kick off school safety with our Lieutenant Martin. He is in charge of our training. I'm just going to turn things over to him.
Hello, everybody. So our last training day for SWAT, we got into the high school and did some familiarization with the school with the SWAT team members. We're a multi-jurisdictional unit. So like the officers, for example, there, three are from Brecksville and one is from Brooklyn Heights. Basically just cover what it's like to work inside of that environment, different tactical considerations, and covered hostage rescue techniques inside of the school building, which is basically what we would have to do should there be an important incident at the high school. So it was a good training day. I know the school staff was happy that we were there, and we got a lot out of it and had a really good training day there. We have appointed two new members from Independence to our SWAT team, Joseph Mancino and Victor Hayes. So I'm just going to let them tell you a little bit about themselves.
So I'm Joseph Mancino. So recently, you know, I haven't been with the department as long as some of the other, but been since last December. You know, before that, I spent 3 years at the city of Berea. During my time as police officer, this is something that I always saw going after. Super excited to be chosen. You know, I worked my tail off to make sure, you know, they made the right decision. Super excited, you know, be able to make the best impact that I can for the city.
So where'd you grow up?
In Independence.
Where do you live now?
I currently live in Independence.
I just want to make sure.
Where'd you go to high school?
I just want to make sure. And have you been married with some?
Independence.
I'll verify. I've known you for since you were in the second. Fantastic family.
Athletics, yes.
Very good running back too for Blue Devils, yeah.
And what year did you graduate?
In 2011.
Okay, and you're in the Alumni Association, I assume?
Yes.
Good plan.
You're going to be paired on me for sure.
Well, good evening. I'm not from Independence, I'm at school here, but I do currently reside here. I did Valley View, worked there for 8 years. I was in the Marine Corps for 15 years. And I was in Valley View as a department instructor down there, and I was also on the current SWAT. So when I came to my lateral Independence, I was on the same lateral as Joe. We both were given the opportunity and probation to try out the team in the bullpen. So I made the team again, so I'm pretty honored.
He's challenged with this shooting scores. Do I tell the truth? He was shooting.
Oh, I'm professional.
The only one that. We are very blessed to have some people, the caliber of people that we have in this department here today. As a matter of fact, there was one Leanne, I was used to put a shot at you. I say that because he's very respected for his shooting ability to firearms proficiency. So,
Victor, did you say you were in the Marines 15 years?
No, actually, I lived in almost 15, so it was like 4.5, 4.5.
And then you were a Valley View officer for
8 years.
Yep.
He looks like a good guy. The Marine Corps Reserves.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So you were able to do part of that overlap.
Yeah.
Tommy, I'm doing the same thing. I'm seeing 23 plus 18. I mean, it can't be 4 years.
Yeah. I'm trying to count the numbers in my head, too.
Yeah. I'm blessed for good games. So I look younger than I actually am.
And he lived over here on Brexville Road. I see his house as you drive down. He's turned right off the ceiling, and he lived right here at the residence hall.
Joe, who's your wife?
Nicolina,
Cerna. Oh, Cerna, okay. So both of them went through the pretty intense physical fitness qualification and rifle and pistol qualification, where they have to qualify on targets that are half of the size of the normal standard of auto target. They both did excellent, and that's why they're here today. Victor was a member of our team before, went to Valley View. Very happy to have him back. We had an arrest warrant to serve for Seven Hills the other day. Victor came right back in, stepped in, and was like he was never gone. So we're very happy to have both of them back. In October, on October 14th, patrol is going to be training in the high school. All the patrol detectives, even the chief is going to go through this training. Everybody's going to be required to go through it. SORAT stands for Single Officer Response to an Active Threat. So basically, unfortunate involving type situation that we're all hoping never happens, but we have to train like it's going to happen tomorrow. So during that training, we'll be covering interior breaching, like you see there, the problem, the tool that you have to use, and how breaching an outward opening door is different than breaching an inward opening door. Because we're going to draw on the message that we are going to get into the building. We're going to train the patrol officers on hostage rescue techniques. They're going to run through some scenarios, hopefully with simulations at that point, on how to handle a hostage rescue operation from the patrol level. There's going to be a little bit of classroom time on mindset, the proper mindset when you're going into a situation like that. So we're going to do an all-encompassing training day where everyone's going to get through. We're glad that the schools are working with us, and we're going to build on that relationship. So we're looking forward to that training as well. All throughout the summer, or at least some of the summer, we've been giving bobs to all the schools and able to get in, and all the patrol officers have been doing walkthroughs already to get familiar with the school buildings. So if they need to go to a certain area of the school, they know where that is. You know, we're really leaning into this school safety, and we're going to be as well-trained department in the area as you can have as far as responding to an active threat at our schools.
I got a question. Have the kids participated in any kind of situation if there was
that's but Alice a little bit here. Alice training would encompass that. We're trying to do that as well. when the students aren't there.
I know you guys do, but my son said they had it 2 years ago, but then last year they
we'll talk about that next for the Alice. Again, I just want to reiterate, we're really lucky to have both of these individuals. They came from the lateral list. They both have ties to the City of Independence. They accept both of these individuals. They were the top in almost every single category, from shooting to physical fitness. They earned their positions. It's such a benefit to us to have people that are residents. They know it, knows the school like the back of his hand, and now he's on the SWAT team and would be one of the first people to enter into a building if the worst situation ever happens. So very lucky to have them both, and I do thank them for being here today.
Chief, question, follow up on that, not with them individually, but the whole school safety issue. I'm assuming you would take a situation like that Texas shooting, and once all the details are known, which they seem to be fairly known at this point, do you guys use that as a training tool itself to see, like, probably we're being told a lot of mistakes, a lot of errors made in that Texas situation, and then do you guys use that to study what they did wrong so that we learn from those kind of situations?
Yeah, we study not just that. We study everything. So, like, good things, bad things that other departments do, we always are looking at those things. I mean, Uvalde, I mean, where do you even start with how many bad things went wrong there? I mean, we just, one of the catalysts to doing the SORAT training was to remind all of our officers when we do our classroom training that we're different. We're going in. The point is to save human life. That's what we've all signed up to do. You hear that, you're going in. That is single officer response to an active threat. That's the whole meaning of that. So we know that didn't happen. Everyone knows that didn't happen in Uvalde, and that's why we are hammering this home. And that when we got the school, we are putting every officer through it. I am no exception. I could be in my office. I am going through that same training, and Lieutenant Martin will hold me accountable to my tactics. I'm
a safety officer with you too.
Absolutely. We will have classrooms. We're going to have a classroom section to review some of those things as a group, so nobody misses us.
Does this SWAT group also work in adjacent districts like Brecksville or Cowdides?
Yeah, do you know all the schools that your SWAT team?
Yeah, that's what I was interested in.
I have a list, but Broadview, Brecksville Elementary, Cuyahoga Heights, High, any schools in Cuyahoga Heights, our schools, all of them.
You could have Parma too.
Yeah, Parma, we work closely. Parma SWAT is a member of the SEB organization, and we work with their team. If this call out came out, pretty much every member that we can tour the problem from here to Middleburg would be coming. So yeah, there's a lot of resources being a sub city that we can fill with this problem.
Making sure we got these positions appointed and filled was very important to me because they were vacant. They were vacant. Getting them this training, we now have somebody that's working the road that is going to calls all day, and if something happens, he's the one that could go through the doors instead of waiting for SWAT. Remember, you've already waited an hour plus to wait for the SWAT team to get there. We have officers that are going in that have advanced training beside the basic officers that are going to learn just SORAD. We have advanced officers that are working the roadway that have these skills that can lead the charge and get things going.
Would that include like Lawrence School? I realize that the main part of Lawrence is out in Northfield, but does that include any private
school?
We'll
go 100%. Yes.
Well, that one's on Wallings in Heights.
Right.
Well, Fred Michaels and any of those daycares, all of them.
Yeah,
we're under our, anything under our umbrella.
Yeah,
all, we're going
in. If there's an active shooter, the thing about these tactics are they're concepts and they're easily applicable to multiple types of structures. So we will be training this at the high school because we feel like that's important. Our most valuable resources in these buildings for children. But if something like this occurred in an office building on Rockside Road, it's the same tactics. It doesn't change. So we train them up there, get them ready for the worst of the worst of the worst, and this all applies to any building in this city, anywhere.
And then all of it, I heard some of you go in and find the shoot with them.
If I can repeat something that I learned in the Marine Corps, locate, close with, and destroy.
There's no question about what our strategy is.
We're an all-night threat. We're going to save.
And I think that was sort of the problem in Uvalde, and that's why I mentioned part of the training is going to be some training on the mindset you have to have. I think there were mindset issues in Uvalde.
Well, I mean, I was pleased to hear your training in the high school. I was also pleased that you added that you had your officers familiarize themselves with the middle school and the elementary school. And particularly now while it's summertime, that's a great time that there wouldn't be extra concerns by the young kids.
Yeah, it was mandatory. We did mandatory foot patrols. All of our officers were taking extra time out of the day to walk the schools. And so this is not just a one-off thing as well. A lot of departments might say, like, oh, we're focused on school safety, and then next year it's no longer part of their mindset. School safety is, we're in it for the long haul. We want to make sure all of our children, our residents, and our adjoining cities that we do help defend as well are safe. We formed a safety committee task force that includes myself, Lieutenant Martin, who's also the sub-commander and soon to be the sub-commander, Vice Superintendent Drelling, and former U.S. Marshal Mike Young. I'm sorry, I misspelled the word Marshal on that. I apologize. It seems more French there, U.S. Marshal. Mike Young. He is a former U.S. Marshal. He is also coming here to help us. We have meetings. We have a meeting coming up in August. We are going to continue these meetings at least quarterly, and we did walkthroughs through the school, myself and Lieutenant Martin. We talked about school mapping. Having maps that are very easily identifiable so that if a officer goes in, they know where to go. Even no matter how much you walk through a school, anything else like that, you might have Valley View officer, you might have somebody else from another. Mapping needs to be very simple to show where somebody has to go for the threat and not be confused. Numbering of classrooms. The vice superintendent, when we all discussed this, stated that it's not good. Like right now, numbers don't make sense. They don't go in order. Well, here's 200 on the first floor. Here's the. It doesn't make any rhyme or reason. So he's renumbering all of that based on our conversations. We are also going to be getting, once those rooms are renumbered, there are going to be external room numbers stenciled on the windows, exterior numbers. This way, if a SWAT team does have to come and there needs to be a sniper, such as Victor, who is a proficient sniper, the room number is there on the outside. He sees it from the outside. He doesn't have to guess which room somebody is in. We can get it right away, and it's stenciled on the window so that somebody can't remove that from the inside. Right now, they are currently on white pieces of paper taped to the window. So we did that. We have the new keyless entry. I have one right here. This is mine. This gets us access to the schools. We no longer have to worry about getting a key on site, break the door, anything like that. This is quick access to get into the schools, allows our officers to check the buildings faster, get acclimated to the schools without having to worry about getting, you know, alarms set off or anything else, and we have this nice technology. Safety checks, foot patrols, as I stated, we are doing quite a bit. We just have our officers going up there to do our random safety checks at the school, and we discuss traffic bollards and other things with the superintendent and vice superintendent to see what can be efficient to upgrade safety for our schools. The point of all this is the conversations are continuing. We never want to be complacent on this and just be like, we're safe. We want to always make sure we're thinking forward. CCTV cameras, as you all know, our department, Lieutenant Buhner, wrote a grant, $50,000 grant for CCTV cameras. Recently, Finance Director Vern got wind of another grant. We plan on writing another grant for $100,000 worth of CCTV cameras. If we get them, great. If we get half of them, awesome. That's really what we wanted anyways. But you always ask for more and do what you can, take what you can get. The CCTV cameras, we have four licenses with the LPR flock cameras that you all implemented, Safety Director Kurtz put into place, that we can put into the CCTV cameras. So four of them we get for free. If we put one outside of the school, if we had a threat, we knew this person, we could put their license plate in the flock cameras and it would buzz and we would know what direction, where they're coming, if they're coming near the school. With these new cameras, we would be able to have that technology added to our CCTV cameras. These are the blue light cameras that I discussed in the last meeting.
I mean, you know, hold on, the process of grant to see if we're successful or not.
September is the $50,000 grant to find out if we got those. That would cover us for 10 cameras, I believe 10 cameras. And this new grant that Vern brought to our attention, I'm not sure when we would find out about it, but I would imagine.
The application deadline is Friday before Labor Day, so I would assume sometime in September.
Yeah, so.
Federal or state grant?
That is a state, that's actually a county. That's a county grant. The one Lieutenant Buhner put in for was a state grant. State. Just so you all know, because the conversation really has not centered on anything except for our public schools, I personally reached out to the Nest schools, that's Le Chaperon Rouge, St. Michael's, Goddard schools, and any daycares within our city. I came with my business card, I told them we would do a safety plan, we would put people through ALICE training. I CC'd the mayor with the emails to show that we are being proactive. As of this time, none of them wish to engage us in a safety plan or further conversation on it. So I'm not done with it. I will try other avenues. We do have our business liaison. He just went to St. Michael's today. We are trying to open dialogue, but we're pushing and doing what we can. And finally, we have ALICE training. ALICE training is when Sergeant Broey is certified in this. It's going to be with the teachers. We plan on doing this in August. Ben Hagedish, superintendent, is all for that. He wants to make this as realistic as possible. We are discussing ways to still include the children in the future, but not having it so psychologically stressful for them. So somewhat like a game where they aren't going to feel like they're in a danger zone just by coming into school one day where the police are training these scary things. So we're finding the best way to do that. Our primary concern is teaching the teachers. If the teachers know what to do and they can get the students in the right area where the SWAT team needs them to be in these type of situations, I feel we're in a good position. Superintendent Hagedish spoke with us and he stated that we will do this every year. We will not miss a year on this. He took some time off due to COVID and it was just something that fell by the wayside. We're not going to let that fall by the wayside anymore. We're going to continue to push that. Finally, I just want to state that our officers are working very hard. The reason why we want to make sure we get our laterals hired up, officers, just because the new laws have passed for guns, we are still encountering a lot of illegal guns. Where our officers are confiscating a lot of weapons still. Still a very dangerous job for our officers, especially with how proactive our officers are in the city, which is good because it keeps it safe. If we're proactive, it stops that from
letting it get to its destination. I'm going to give you an example of that. Recently, a flock hit that we had on a stolen vehicle. All of our officers went to that to find the stolen vehicle, and we knew this person most likely be armed and dangerous. We were able to safely take this person into custody, but this is what the person had on them. This is their magazine for their weapon. One day. This is that. It's a 50-round magazine put into a Glock. You see how many bullets are in there? This is the Glock was modified to be fully automatic. That was a single trigger pull. See that? Yep. Oh, sorry. No. Rapid fire. So this person was ready. He wasn't ready for us. So our officers, one of our new sergeants, coordinated a takedown of this vehicle so that everyone stayed safe. This is what we're dealing with. And the reason why we can do that now is the concept has been embraced. Mayor Kurtz has embraced this concept. We're getting the staffing that we need. We're getting the supervisors that we need. When we get this lateral posted, we hope to find more highly trained individuals. And I will remind you that our resident here, Victor, our resident here, grew up here, both came off the lateral list. This is what we're looking for. We're looking for the top, the best from other, you know, other departments that have a connection to our city, that can know it and want to protect it the same way we all do. With that,
in that case, we're the Black Hammer. Where was the car located then?
We ended up stopping it near the Redwood, I believe, was where the car ended up getting taken down.
That was, I believe, Doubletree.
Doubletree. We ended up taking it down.
Redwood first, that great camera. That's not the location for probably the Doubletree.
Yeah, we also had one the other day. You'll see it in your weekly, the with another flock takedown we just recently had. So the flock has been great. The CCTV cameras will help add that element for us that we need to get better looks at cars. Remember, flock is designed to get license plates, not people, not the cars, to get the license plate for us. The CCTV cameras are going to get us the people, it's going to get us the car, it's going to get us the whole kit and caboodle. So now we got all of it. And they're going to work in tandem together. Once we have those cameras, we plan on speaking to businesses such as the hotels, the banks, everyone else. This is what we have. This is our infrastructure. We recommend you also get the same type of cameras and allow our officers to watch them. We will watch it for free. Our jailers will put a giant TV such as this up in the jail. When they're not watching prisoners, they're watching our cameras. They're relaying information to our officers. It's an extra set of eyes. Since we do not have dispatch here, we want to use our jailers to our utmost. And they can do more than one job. Everyone has a part to play in safety in this community that's working.
And it seems you have reading your reports, almost there's not any hotel that's not on scene. It seems like about everyone, there's an incident, you know, every few months and everything. So you just can't assume that all these hotels are, I mean, every one of them, there's, you don't know which one they're going to select.
We keep a good eye out. We have good relationships with the hotels. Our officers stop in, they talk, our business liaison tries to get to know them on a personal level. Give us information, somebody who is suspicious, somebody, stuff like that, let's get to it before. And we try. You'll see a lot of times in the police weeklies, we're stopping cars as people are still in the parking lot. They haven't even entered their room yet. That's what we want to get to again. Like, what are they going to do in their rooms? We don't know. They're setting up for something. You know, drugs, guns. We want to get it before it can affect our residents, before it can affect our families.
Well, that was one of the things I saw with my ride-along is we visited two different hotels, and the officers had direct connections with people working in each hotel and excellent cooperation with the hotel people and our officers. It was great to see.
Does anybody have any questions before we before I turn this over to you? The last bit of training we are doing, and Lieutenant Martin is going to be coordinating this, is we're going to be doing a rescue task force training Chief Reek is going to talk more on this. All of our officers went through this. It's coordination training between paramedics and officers during a hot zone call of a school shooting. Lieutenant Martin has already gone through this training. He's going to coordinate with Chief Riga. We want to, every avenue that we can do, that we can sink our teeth into, we want to make sure that we are providing that for our officers. Luckily, we have a great group.
Presentation there as far as the RTF or the Rescue Task Force, that's something we've been doing since like 2016 with the RNC. There was a need at that time for that capability, and we picked it up at the fire department and kind of ran with it. We did a lot of trainings in the schools with our police. We also invited other area departments to do that training, and to this day we still have the body armor each squad for the medics to put on and be ready to go in as soon as the police make their entry. As they clear a hallway, we would go into what would be considered the warm zone with officers guarding the medics, and they would be able to treat immediately anybody that's been injured in the situation there. The skill set as far as what they're doing, it's to control large bleeds, to do certain procedures to try to secure that person and then get them out to get assistance. So it's a very rapid, coordinated situation where they're making entry initially and we're not too far behind them in order to try to save lives in that situation. So we do carry extra equipment in our squads and our engines for that. We have body armor on the engines and also our chase vehicles. So it is something that we do have available and ready to be used.
What is that equipment system?
Consists of a level 3 bulletproof vest, tactical helmet, goggles. We also have pouches on front and back with different medical equipment. We have needles for decompressing, tension pneumothorax for like a gunshot wound in the chest. We have occlusive dressings. We have tourniquets, lots of tourniquets to occlude bleeding in the arms or limbs. And just various gauze and packing and things like that.
So do you guys replace your body armor like the police do so often?
Their body armor, I mean, body armor has a expiration date of about 5 years, but that's including daily use, you know, body sweat, degrading over time due to light exposure. Our gear is kept in closed cabinets away from the light and clean bags, so we estimate it's going to last a little bit longer, but it will eventually need to be replaced. So we have purchased some out of our own. We've gotten some on county grants where those opportunities came up. We get them through grants. So, but we are very active in the process of being prepared for that. And actually, we're looking at to do a little bit more coordination with the police again because it has been some time. COVID did kind of derail a lot of trainings and things, but we're going to get back at it with doing some of these in-school trainings as far as the RTF is concerned. Starting over here as far as the fire department goes in terms of staffing, we did do a promotional in April, which we had scheduled. We are going to be promoting one firefighter to lieutenant. That's going to be August 9th at our council, prior to our council meeting at 5 o'clock. His name is Joseph Lechner. Scored number one on our test. And what we're planning on doing here is part of my succession plan was to eventually move one of the lieutenants up to a 40-hour position where they can start learning what we do on the administrative side. Along with that, we'll have to give a new hire list and backfill that position because that lieutenant leaves that shift. So we'll still have one officer on each, one lieutenant on each shift, and then we'll have two lieutenants on the day shift. Again, that lieutenant's going to be it's going to be considered our risk reduction officer. So he's going to be working on community aspects of education and so forth, and also learning fire prevention and some of the other duties. As we start moving towards another 4 years, we start seeing a change out of our administrative staff. So that has been completed. The new hire test will try to get going here in the next couple months, as far as that goes. Operationally, we're on track to be at between 2,100 and 2,200 calls this year. So that gets us back to where we were pre-COVID as far as our busyness. And you know, I know that Vern would confirm, you know, we don't have as many people down on Rockside as we used to, but yet our call volume is still there throughout the community. So we still have a lot going on. Incident-wise, just some of the major things that we've done. We've had a house fire on Brookside in the first part of the year. We had Bob Evans had a fire as well. We were a participant in the Brooklyn Hotel fire. That was right around when we had the basketball All-Star game. That was a Hampton Inn that was there. Our ladder truck was there for a while. The Parma fire, which was at Padua. We were there for quite a long time during the day for that one.
Go to that hotel fire?
No, we had a negotiation meeting at the time, so we sent a sponsor.
I heard you want us.
Yeah, we made sure that guys were going, but that was one of those weird situations where we had three lieutenants and one firefighter on it. You were asking who was in charge. Was it the firefighter or the three lieutenants? But we had negotiations going on, so everybody was kind of thin as far as that goes, but. But a very interesting fire. So we also had fire at Dollar Bank, and it was a small one, but got repaired quickly. So it was a lighting issue there. And then Harry Steakhouse, not too long ago, we had a pretty good scare of a fire there, but it was contained. So so that's what we were doing fire-wise. In terms of some things that have popped up, the Cleveland radio system. We've been on the Cleveland radio system for probably almost 7 years now. So what that means is that we our devices, our portables, our mobiles, all work on their infrastructure. And typically, when we went with them, there's a per month per device charge. They had not been charging us up to this point, but they started at the beginning of the year with, I guess, the new administration to charge for those devices. So that's something I had planned for in my budget. But we had to initiate this year, so that is something moving forward that will be something to take into account for the budgeting. But the amount is it's $5 per device per month, so any portable or mobile radio on their system, which is still cheaper than what Marks is charging. They're at $10 per month on their system. So,
but that's confirmed they won't backbill us for previous.
I've had no, yeah, there was no mention of doing that at all.
So we don't own that equipment?
No, these would be the towers and everything, the infrastructure. No, so we own just the radios and stuff like that go on the system. And to try to have our own system and just cost prohibitive. Yeah. So training-wise, we've done quite a bit. You know, in addition to our Southwest Emergency Response Team units, the people that are on HAZMAT, FIU, Technical Rescue, those folks have all been going since the beginning of the year. We do weekly and monthly trainings for fire and EMS. So some of the things, just some highlights here. We did the mental wellness that was put on by Jen Vitron the first part of the year. In addition to that, we also had Dave Freeman, a fire chief, with some post-traumatic stress experience, and he brought it to the department, talked to all three shifts about what he experienced and he went through. was pretty invaluable training. We've done our annual EAPs for all firefighters. So part of our wellness and fitness program is to go, everybody to go to EAP and sit down and talk with basically a counselor. Just to, it could be about anything that's bothering you, but we really strongly believe that if we all go, then there's no stigma there, you know, for one person going, and it's been very successful. We've been doing it for 3 years now. Also part of that wellness program, we're going through our wellness exams right now. It takes several months to get these done, but we're, each person's going for those exams, and it's been pretty successful with that as well. And actually, we had a three-year contract with the clinic, which will be, you know, this is our last year, so next year we'll be looking into the services again for our firefighters. We've done ice rescue training over at Elmwood Park, drivers training down at Valley View Cinemark, using their park lot to do an obstacle course for our ambulances. We've hosted the Cleveland Clinic's helicopter safety classes. We've done three of those so far this year. We have one more to go. Those are where you get disrupted by a helicopter landing in the back parking lot once in a while. Our guys actually piggyback in and train with them where it's appropriate for what they're doing. We sent six individuals to the FDIC or Fire Department Instructor Conference down in Indianapolis. Had some great hands-on training down there. A couple of guys went through a flashover trailer down there, which prompted us to see if we could get the state flashover trailer for everybody to go through. And that's what we did this past weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We had that large trailer in the back lot that was news blurbs on that as well. Basically, it's a giant oven. Put the firefighters in there, recreate the conditions of flashover, and allow them to firsthand see that so that they can tell when they're in a house fire, you know, what the conditions can be like. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's pretty darn close. The temperatures are there. This one we got up to almost 1,300 degrees at the ceiling. We're down low, and it's around, you know, close to 200 degrees. So, but the flames do flash over you, roll across the whole top, and then they quickly put it down and they rekindle. So it was really great training for everybody to experience that. We did some hemlock. We did training on hemlock trail rope training. We brought our technical rescue team in, and we actually trained with them on one day, working on rope skills. That was earlier in the spring. We did a standpipe drill operation down at the Hyatt Place. We do this every 2 years, actually simulating a fire on one of the upper floors and stretching hose and all that. We hosted at the Civic Center a after-action recap of the Miami. This was the Surfside building collapse down in Florida. We had two technicians from our area go down to that incident with the Rescue Task Force 1 from Ohio. So they brought back that experience and told us, you know, what they did right, what they did wrong, how it can be better. Interestingly enough, they worked with Israeli search and rescue folks when they were down there because they had a very prominent Jewish population there that they came over and helped. So they got some, you know, international experience there working with them and seeing how they do things. And why do I mention this? Because we had the collapse in Lakewood of the parking deck, and these same folks were on that, and they used some of those, so that knowledge to help them there. So it all comes back, and here in Independence, Ohio, we're learning about some of this stuff, which is really amazing. Last week, we were able to put together for Linda Parisi. She had a kids fitness class, so we threw together a firefighter combat challenge for them, which turned out to be pretty interesting and fun for the kids, so it might be something we build on for next year. But we'll see how that goes. We've done multiple CPR classes for high school seniors, rec department staff, Girl Scouts, doctor's offices that we took care of their staff, and then one business, Quasar Energy, over on East Pleasant Valley. We've also done fire extinguisher classes for two office staffs, and we have two other classes scheduled in the fall here. So we continue to be very active on our training side, and many of these trainings we've tried to do regionally with our partners around us, Valley View, Seven Hills, and we invite them a lot of times to come in and sit on these trainings. One of the other things that we did is we just recertified or renewed our CE license for continuing education with the state. So we have three EMS trained instructors. And when they put on a class working through Marymount, they're able to put those classes on, design them themselves, and host them without having to have, like, our Medi-Control come in and do it. They can do it here. So it kind of saves us some money in terms of training and sending people out for training and so forth. So that's a big thing, and we recert about every 2 years on that. Just a recap on equipment, our new Braun ambulance, which we ordered in March of 2021, I just found out that we have a chassis now. Only took 18 months to get a chassis. I have a meeting tomorrow with the sales rep and see more details about exactly when it'll be delivered, but I'm anticipating probably December or January, but hopefully they have better news for me on that. It's just been very, very slow in the production of these ambulances and getting the chassis from the major manufacturers. So it's been very big delays, like I'd mentioned in the past. Right now, I think it's 180 days for Braun. So I may, in fact, be approaching you next year for a squad that I need in 25. So it's just amazing. And it's, you know, how do you anticipate whether things are going to speed up or not? I really don't know. So fire gear just came in about a week ago. We'd ordered that in October of last year. So that's a very long time to wait for fire gear as well. So again, everything's just very slow to come through. All of our engines, our big engines and our ladder, have gone through the preventative maintenance, so they're in good shape right now. We do have to spend a little bit of money on our older engine and on our ladder truck, but everything is good so far. We have to get to the aerial operations test, which is usually done in the fall for our ladder truck. The rest of our current ambulances are in good shape. Our older ambulance that will be replaced when the new one comes in, amazingly enough, I'm being told what, you know, the trade-in value on it was like $2,000. Now I could probably sell it for close to $60,000. Just because.
$60,000?
Yeah. So we'll see about that one. But yeah, so mainly because people can't get ambulances. If they wreck an ambulance, how do they replace it? They can't. They got to turn to the aftermarket, you know, used, and there's not that much out there. So. Outside of that, we put new portable suction units on our ambulances. Our old ones were very old, and we came up with some new technology, so we put those on. We have a new, it's called a fit test machine. It's called a QuantaFits for testing our masks for the fit on the individual. We did a group purchase of that years ago with all the other departments in the area. We did it again for the new latest and greatest version, so we have that this year. So that's just been put into place. It's like a $13,000, $14,000 item that we end up only paying about $1,000 when we should cost share that out. So, and it just goes around each department for a month of use. so that was implemented this year. In the fall, we've got some hose testing coming up. Continue to do hydrant inspections and testing. We've tested our tornado siren several times. We had a glitch at one point where we weren't activating properly through CBD, but we got that fixed. We're good there. Outside of that, you know, we're still looking at some of the bigger projects that we're waiting on the capital plan to come through to do those. So, does anybody have any questions?
Did you ever purchase a safety vehicle for Hemlock Island?
We have our brush truck, which can go down there, but the ATV was on, that's on the five-year budget this year. So that was one item that I was identifying this year that we needed to get. So I'm waiting for those funds to be available.
The cameras we invested in with our partner, Eric, has been paying dividends apparently.
No, by the way,
they don't.
Yeah.
No, we do. We had the rescuer earlier this year, the person, I think it was in January. We were able to utilize the Kubotas from Wreck to clear that area with the snow plowing, but we brought in an ATV from Brooklyn Heights. Those are the ones you probably see around during fireworks and home days. We do bring those in, and they're able to get them here relatively quickly. One of them, they think they drove over, but it would be good to have one right here where we can get right out there quickly. So yeah, the police one's very nice, but it can't haul a patient. It hauls personnel, which is beneficial for sure. So. That's something it's on our agenda. One of the other things that we do, you probably never noticed it, but for the 4th of July fireworks, we brought in, I've done this twice, the county has a trailer. It's a special events trailer. So when you bring that in, that brings in more body armor for like rescue task force operations. body armor helmets. It gives more EMS equipment. Also has tagging and some barricades in it and some other stuff that they have a Kubota on there as well. It's actually, I'm sure it's a John Deere Gator. You can use that for your event, and you just have to schedule it out. So that will be here. We're picking that up on Thursday. So if you happen to see a big white trailer behind the fire department, that's a resource that we need to make use of.
Very good. Anybody else have any questions? Thanks, Chief, for the updates.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, one of the things is good. I have one more item for the agenda. I sure want to go to golf carts.
Nah, I'm like, go ahead.
At a recent mayor's meeting, talked to Mayor Blackwell from Maple Heights, and they're really struggling to financially make ends meet, let alone some of their equipment needs. And so we have
three Ford Explorers. One is a 2014, which actually was delivered in July of 2013, which is 9 years old. And two 2015s, which were delivered in September of 2014, which is 8 years old. The vehicles, they're all sticker priced the same. They're $25,560 a vehicle. What we tried to do recently was put them on gut deals and sell them exclusively to a law enforcement agency. One of the reasons why is there's a number of man hours that it takes to decommission a police car. There's a lot of things in there that we have to take out, like the back seats, and we have to install the normal passenger seats, so we do get some value, or at least a better value for the car. So we thought we would try to sell them to law enforcement agencies. We really didn't get any interest in them at the time, probably because the mileage. And I apologize, I don't have the specific mileage, but each of the vehicles is over 60,000, under 80,000. That's just road miles. And when I was at the city of Cleveland, we used a multiple of, 3 to 4 times that to actually estimate the engine hours for idling. And one of the vehicles also had some front end damage. So we haven't listed them back on gun deals to open them up to the public because it would entail us to decommission the vehicles.
What's the cost of decommission?
Well, I was just trying to think about that. I'm guessing it probably has anywhere between $10 to $15 a vehicle. There's a lot of things that go in it, like we got to take off all the lights, all the decaling. Like I said, we take the fiberglass seat that's in back and we install the original seats that come in the vehicles. All the electronics. Gun racks, bars that are on the back windows, for over the passenger windows. None of this equipment will transfer into any of our newer vehicles because of design changes and so forth. So basically, we would spend 10, 15 hours, pull that stuff out and end up throwing it in the trash or trying to recycle it somehow. So.
I talked to Mayor Blackwell after the meeting, and would there be any objection if we would donate those vehicles to the Maple Heights if they're interested? She said they'd be excited, ecstatic to be able to get something that would upgrade their fleet.
Yeah.
And a couple $1,000, I think $2,500, whatever value is, plus decommissioning. I guess if a good neighbor policy might be in order in this case.
Yeah, I see no problem with that at all. To help out another community that needs help.
So it'd be something that could help them, but it doesn't hurt us at this point. If there's no objection, I'll talk to the rest of the meeting members of council, and if there's no objection, then I'll call her and see if, in fact, they want to come see them. If, in fact, they're interested, then we'll help Maple Heights out.
And it's close to home here anyways.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm sure she'll be ecstatic at back to this. Tell Ron that someone might be coming to look at him.
Okay.
I appreciate that. Thanks for your update on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so last golf cart. So there's been some talk about all these golf carts around town, flying up and down Brookside Road. I've even seen them on 21, that kid's not strapped in the back.
I saw two.
So I don't know, I think Councilman Walchano had called me and asked to put something on safety committee, or we have talked about one of his meetings.
Yeah, we talked about that at Streets and Sidewalks, and that's why we said it makes sense to get it into safety.
So,
yes, sir.
I guess it's just out there to get people's reaction, what you guys think about it, what we're going to do about it. We're not going to be silent, but it's something that maybe we should look at what other cities are doing, be proactive, and, you know, I personally don't think that we have a golf cart community. I mean, there's some communities that are strictly, I can see golf carts. I just came back from vacation, they were everywhere. But they got their own lanes to drive them, they got their own intersections. So it's a lot different than being around here where, you know, where do you go on? You have to go on 21 to really get anywhere, unless you live on a side street and go to a, you know, a little shop somewhere. But I'd hate to see them on Rockside Road, I hate to see them on 21. But how do you say you can have it here and you can't have it there? So it's just out there for discussion. So whatever anybody thinks, have at it.
Well, when we, I had a conversation with one of the residents in the area around Brookside, and it sounds like we have about at least a half a dozen golf carts that have lights, are licensed, have been inspected, have seat belts, have insurance, have operators that follow the rules by being 16 and over, you know, licensed driver to be using a golf cart. And then subsequently there are another half a dozen plus or minus in that area that aren't licensed, that have younger kids riding around on them. So I guess that's the biggest question. We have one batch of licensed ones. We have another bunch of ones that are especially a problem. I know even a couple of years ago when we were coming back from fireworks, there was a unlit golf cart that was going up Rexville Road in the dark, and we saw it soon enough. But that becomes the question. And as you said, Rockside, definitely not an appropriate place. And Pleasant Valley is very dicey too. I mean,
drive on Elmwood, but you can't drive on 21, you can't drive on Washington.
Especially in the state code, through the chair, it's okay.
Yeah.
Assume you're here for this. The state code allows local municipalities to pass laws to allow it. And they specifically mentioned that they cannot go on streets with a mile per hour greater than 35. So it's identified that the streets that have 25 or 30 as a speed limit that you can pass laws to allow public to be put in allow to go on to Rexville Road, Pleasant Valley, and Rockside, because the speed limit on those streets are 35. Well, you can cross the street still.
Right.
Somebody that lives off of Chestnut could take Chestnut because the speed limit is 25 going to Babes. They could cross the street that's going 35, but they can't make a left or right turn then. And then they can go back to where they came from. If you're going to
fire. So, like in the center of our town where it's 20 miles an hour, 25, you can be buzzing up and down 20.
Yeah, I know. That's a state highway. I think it's generally regarded as a 35 mile an hour street roadway. And I just throw a bunch of images there that show that across the country, there's, like you said, I don't know where you have vacation, Tommy, but they're out there.
Oh, we're out there.
I kind of facetiously made the comment at that streets meeting that I would actually mind seeing more of them going down my street, because that could have slowed the cars down then, because as Council Vice Mayor Mandel opined at that meeting, that they fly down our street, and so actually having golf carts there would slow the traffic down a little bit.
Well, if you, Mr. Chairman, if you wouldn't mind, I'll have the police chief and organize a little this group to take this law, take the law, and let's do a little research what other communities are doing, what their requirements are, if they have ordinances on the books, do some research, and then you can find out through your sources, resources, and your sources, if there are policies and programs, legislation that would give us some type of boundaries to this. I mean, the finance director just outlines boundaries.
So yeah, because state law provides cover on that second page. It says, by ordinance, local government can do this, and if you do, you shall do all the following, 1, 2, and 3, and 4. It's all right there. So they kind of give the guidance to a community on what you have to do if you're going to allow, they call these low-speed vehicles, LSVs.
So you have to, looks to me, if I'm something is over in a 35-mile-an-hour speed limit zone, that the police department would have to conduct the inspection of the vehicle, and then that passes the vehicle inspection, and then notify. Oh, notify the director of public safety. Oh, great. You were doing good and send them forward.
Off a little bit, so you're designated.
That's how the gentleman's sitting right here. So, if you wouldn't mind, I mean, this has been years in the making, so maybe we can take a little time, and if you don't mind, Jimmy, maybe we can do some research for us, take this as the foundation, and maybe build upon it and find out what others are doing.
Certainly.
If there is some strategy or there is something that makes sense from a safety standpoint, we can talk about it and bring it up at your next meeting or sooner. If there's something that you recommend doesn't make sense, then we won't do it.
I'll bring it up to the next chief's police meeting this month.
Okay, I appreciate it. And if you can get some research together, then we'll get it back to the safety committee and all councils so that if we have to do some at the legislative, then we can do that. Thank you.
Well, yeah, we're missing very easy information.
And so we are silenced legislatively on golf carts and city of Independence. There's nothing prohibiting them, nothing allowing them.
Debbie gave you something. She walked in.
She was wondering, didn't feel high on this.
Hi, buddy. How are you?
So they're saying,
I was like that for a second.
Playing golf. That's what I say. The only use for it is for playing golf.
So if you got a set of
clubs, she's good.
That's not going out to the high school that hit the ball. I'm going to show golf, I'm growing up, that's it.
They're not really currently on like a main road or something. Like if they're just shooting past the school, they come up here to the pool or something. You know, we usually, you know, let our residents, you know, have something like that, just to take their kids to the pool in the afternoon. You'll see some of the golf cart at the pool. So when we do our foot patrols, we'll see them there. That's not like the side streets where we're just, you know, entertaining to the children and drop off to family members. That's different. My concern would be, again, as was already addressed, Brexville, Rockside, opening up a can of worms on that. Yeah, I get the concept that, yeah, it'll slow down people on wood, and, you know, all of a sudden there'll be this slower car. My guess is people are going to pass, and now you're going to be with a more reckless driver that's trying to go around blindly, and that opens up a bigger can of worms than it was there before. So that's just my 2 cents, but I will 100% investigate. I will speak to other departments. And I feel that level of collaboration will give you a total picture of what everyone's thinking.
So to answer your question, we don't want to allow them to try to find their concerns. But if someone is reckless and we get a call, then we're going to go to their house and talk to them. And usually if it's someone under 8, we're like the parents, and it brings their attention that, hey, you know that this golf cart was, you know, on the other side of town or whatever.
They're electric, and we're encouraging green lifestyles. I don't know why we should discourage.
I'm not discouraging. I'm not saying that
we haven't.
I think we follow the legal age. They should be at least 16 or so. If they're on the road.
Someone wants
a 12-year-old.
I still think there are a lot of questions.
But in my
I'm where you can draw the line. I'm seeing more electric scooters. I'm seeing the e-bikes.
Yes, well,
there's the e-bike thing on the road.
Well, you're not going to let these ones on the sidewalk.
Or what?
You can offer them on the sidewalk, right?
Well, you're ready.
You can do it too, though, so,
or are you talking to golf cart?
Some people are putting golf carts on the sidewalk. That's the other question. I know we have a resident. Did you want to say anything about it?
I'm one of the fully licensed, fully insured title. I went through the whole process of getting my license plates, and I think I'm on the side of, I got the license plate. It is fun, just like the chief said, driving down, getting the kids to the pool, all that stuff. I'm not one of the ones that has the kids on the golf carts that aren't buckled in. I just think right now what's happening is there's a very small group of golf carts that do have the license plates that did go through the process, that are titled, that are insured, and other people are picking up $500 golf carts off of Facebook Marketplace, letting their 12-year-old drive it down the street. We see it in our area quite a bit, and unfortunately, I think it's one of those things that we're just kind of getting grouped into, hey, the golf carters, So there is a clear distinction between people that are doing it legally and the people that are just abusing it, and they're the ones that are driving down. I've seen them on my street, drive down the sidewalk, driving people's front yards. But the ones that are licensed, we're not the ones doing the sidewalk riding.
What street are you?
East Steele.
Yeah, but I thought you were caught speeding then.
Yeah. Well, not my car. I'll show you that one.
36 and a 35.
You know what? The 36 and 35, that was it.
Right?
Downhill. Well, appreciate the time to come in, and just so you can see that there's, we've had incidents over the years where we've had to go to their houses and talk to parents, and we would do that, continue to do that if we see someone report something. But some of these safety issues that are brought up, these kids hanging all over the carts, and that creates not only a nuisance issue, but a bigger factor, safety issue. So Chief's going to research it. Thank you, Finance Director, for giving us a template to work off of, and then we can report back. And obviously, if yours is licensed, you're legal. You're going to be legal no matter what. You're legal in the state of Ohio, so.
Well, I would also, I'd just like to add that I have done a lot of research in what other communities have been doing, what laws they have passed. I'd love to sit down and talk with
Chief.
Anybody to help make this safer. Professionally, I am a pilot, a corporate pilot, so I deal with risk management a lot, so I understand that we want to do this safely, but I'm not going to lie, it is fun, in the summertime to drive the golf carts and stuff like that, but I do want to see it.
Can I ask a question? You're a commercial pilot. How come you have a nice tan?
What's that?
How do you have a nice tan and be a commercial pilot?
Hey, that pool's open late. I get off the plane and there.
That's
good. That's awesome. I'm going to have a top on.
Right.
I love the most.
So this is Chief Butler.
How you doing?
This is
Brad Russell.
Yeah, I'm probably one of those lease companies that are just a specific company.
Yeah, I fly for one company. They own the plane, and I just fly
all over the country or international.
We go north and south, so we go Cleveland, Raleigh, Charleston, Florida, Canada, kind of just that way. It's a smaller plane. It's not one of the big guys. So yeah, it's just she goes fast and has some fun.
Tiger County Airport.
County Airport.
Well, thank you for taking the time, Brad, and appreciate that. You'll get with the chief and maybe explore at least, the different additional information perspective. Appreciate that if you would. And then we'll continue this. Thank you.
Thank you.
And don't be caught, Steve.
Anything else before the safety committee?
I have one other topic I just want to introduce or call to the attention. I have had one resident talk to me about safety related to the gun range off Pleasant Valley, with one of the big concerns being what is behind the line of fire. Okay, I know that this is a topic that was talked about in safety committee years ago, but are we at a point that should be looked at? I talked to a property owner adjacent to the gun range. They spoke to me. They said they're concerned, number one, it used to be a fairly regular time when people would be using the range, typically on the weekend, but now it's happening lots of different times, so they're reluctant to utilize their 9 acres of their property while that might be happening at any time. So to me, there's kind of two questions. It's, are we indeed still in a position that's safe with the street behind and the homes behind where the gun range is? And are we safe related to adjacent property owners of the times when shooting may be appropriate or not? And then the other one, the other question that came up is, you wouldn't think there would be hunters back there, but we're getting into the hunting season again. Is there a way that people are aware, or it's demarcated so that nobody wanders into the property adjacent? I mean, they shouldn't be there, but that's, I guess, the third piece. So
we were talking about this. My son-in-law brought a gun in Virginia and went to a firing range, and they said, you know, you can't shoot that gun there. It's too big. Oh, I don't even know what he bought, but he bought this gun, he can't shoot it. So they limit the size of guns that you can shoot there. But then he's like, well, what am I supposed to do? This? Yeah, I was going to shoot it anyway. Well, he brought it to Wyoming to shoot it or something. He said, but in Virginia, at their gun range, it's the same thing. He said it's a strip of land. It's about 400 feet wide by 2.5 miles deep. And they said, you're not allowed to shoot that gun.
What difference?
They've got mountains behind it.
So. Well, this range was here before any of us were born. And it's
here. Historical.
Yeah, well, second of all, if they develop that property, at some point it'll take care of itself, in my opinion. But it's down at the bottom. If you've ever been there, it's down at the bottom of the gully. It follows the water course that starts at Pleasant Valley and goes all the way, meanders its finest way to the Cuyahoga River through the hillside. So if they shoot into a bank at the bottom of the gully, and anybody that has property, it's not anywhere near that gun range. That 9 acre you're talking about, probably off hillside.
Yes.
It's nowhere near that. It's got the whole CEI tower in between it. And so it's got, there's nothing even close proximity to that range. I know what you're saying about the different times. It used to be confined to Sundays when it was pretty systematic. People on the hillside would complain, but they understood they were grandfathered. And it's an organization. It's not just a bunch of us going out and shooting. So I believe time will take care of it. And if it wasn't down the bottom of the gully, if it wasn't in some confined area that was, then I think your points are well taken. But the fact is, it's so, the elevation is such a different elevation compared to 9 acres you're referring to.
So. Right. Well, and the other thing that Tom mentions, he says, you know, their gun range is X wide and 2 miles deep. I mean, I know at Camp Perry, when they shoot at that range, they cordon off and patrol the waters beyond that area to keep boats out of that area behind for miles. I'm not sure how many, but it relates to that. So, you know, the fact that there are homes behind there, and even the area in front of the range, if there are rocks or other things there, that seems like that may be a potential concern. So I guess, you know, the questions raised are we indeed in a position where we have safety taken care of? Because obviously this is the committee, and I know that in Akron, hope I'm in the right town, but I know in Akron they spend a ton of money on a gun range. And then after they spent all the money for the gun range, they discovered then there was an errant shot that was in a house beyond, and that caused all kinds of problems with that gun range. So I'm just bringing it up as a topic of discussion because I think it's our responsibility at least to create an awareness of that.
So what, this range has been here, what, 100 years or something?
Longer. 30 something, I think the 20s or 30s.
And it's at the bottom of the hillside?
No, it's bottom of the Southern Valley. Where the old, where they used to have the turkey shoot. Where Kiwanis used to have a turkey shoot before, is it where Rick Tyson Dorfer property, before B.F. Goodrich built their research facility. And then that range was there for that. But we can, now Chief, why don't you, I think you want to go on a trek one day and I might go with you, but I've seen it. So you might want to walk, take a walk down to by Heidelberg. And you can go down over the hill and the bottoms, and then you'll see where they set up, and you'll see where it follows the creek, where they shoot into the bank.
I've seen it, and we had discussions on this several months ago, and I've seen it, and I heard the history. Like, there's some really awesome historical aspects of it, but most of it is out. It is a historical gun range. You really can't make any rules against what they are doing based on their status and their what the gun range is. We had some discussion about it, but I'll go down with you.
Yeah, well, maybe we ought to at least talk to their leadership, make them aware, so that if, in fact, they have a problem, that they alert, we'll know, our safety forces will know exactly where they're at if they have a problem, and if we can address that, because we'll be aware of it, rather than, you know, I know where it's at, I know where it's at, but, I mean, Dave didn't know where it was at, he's been there his whole life, so... I think the police department, fire department should be aware so that at least we, if there's a problem, they call us, we can address it quickly.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, again, like, yeah, old Riverview, how Riverview used to go.
Yeah.
There.
So if you to get to it now, you have to go up the Nero.
Nero.
Oh, go down
the left hand side of the Nero. And you go down, walk down. Walk down to the bottom.
It's a club or
it's a club, yeah.
So, additional question then. Is the club insured? And are we, we're saying it's historical, but are they insured for any kind of mishaps as a club? And are we protected?
I think the caliber of people that cover that club, these weren't like, grabbing a gun off.
You said caliber. That was
beautiful. These were people that were.
Don't want to happen.
Caliber, you're right. These are people, you know, I thought it was more established individuals with a a good understanding of firearms.
Do they own the property or do they lease?
It's an easement or a lease. They have a lease. Like, I believe it's a lease. Mm-hmm. Back in the 1930s.
Very cool. Like, they won't even let the police come down there to
shoot. No, police, they won't even let the police come.
Yeah, it's very stupid. They are very picky.
But Sunday mornings, if you live along that perimeter, that valley perimeter, you can hear them at my house. I got some calls from people on Pleasant Valley. The hillside. You know, told me this, really not much we can do.
Chairman Kelly probably needs a few minutes to get out of this meeting. Yeah, we got some public hearing.
Motion to adjourn.
So,
second.
Thanks, everybody, for showing up.
Thank you.
Good meeting. Thanks, Chief.
Thank you.